Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 23rd of September, and I'm recording just before 9 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And I will start with just a quick stock market overview and then look at some of the longer-term prospects. Now, the week's big story, and it's been an exciting week in here, and the much anticipated and also fairly predictable result was that there was going to be no rate increase this week, as Janet Yellen duly announced. But prior to the Fed's comments, there had been a general expectation in markets that we might get, while the rates would be held, that we would get kind of a militant follow-up on that. You remember what Stanley Fischer had done following the previous meeting. We'd had a rather, calm statement from Janet Yellen, certainly nothing frightening. And then Stanley Fischer appeared a little later on in the day, and I'm now, these are my own words, but basically creating the impression that people were far too complacent and that the risks were quite high that we would see further rate increases this year. Well, in terms of the market's overall summary, following the absence of another, or following Yellen's speech and no significant output from or comment from other central bank governors, was that, well, maybe rates are going to go up in December, but no absolute certainty. So they're not going to get pinned down on that. And I don't think they would move in November. It would probably be too close to the presidential election, and they will not want to do that. So the markets heaved a huge sigh of relief. Well, relief in terms of the people who wanted to buy or who were already long. So none of them, the people who were already long, none of them felt under any pressure to sell. We did get some new buying coming in, which produced some pretty good rallies during the first 4 days of the week. And the people who were most anxious, of course, were the bears who had short positions on. And I suspect that we saw or have seen some fairly aggressive short covering earlier in the week. Now, today, one could say, well, the market was entitled to pause here on Friday, but the rallies really stalled, and selling pressure certainly has had the upper hand in here, and the Dow is down. It's still just gone 9 o'clock, so haven't got the final numbers, but it's down about 128 points in the S&P. Is a little bit behind on my Bloomberg screen, but clearly markets are weaker in here today. And going ahead into next week, I would be surprised if we don't see markets a bit on the defensive next week, and maybe somewhat more than a bit defensive. I'd be surprised, in other words, if we got another big rally to the upside, even though there's a lot of liquidity still floating around in the system here overall. But the technical facts here were a little bit overextended on the upside. Markets are overbought on a short-term basis. But the bigger story, the more important story, is where are the corporate profits, particularly looking at Wall Street? I know we tend to talk about, the whole world tends to talk about Wall Street more than most other markets. I will mention other markets in here tonight. But it's because it's obviously the largest and the most influential market, and we also get the most data on it. But we're in the sixth quarter here with investors. Well, I think they'll shortly be saying, "Where's the beef here in terms of corporate profits?" Because they've been dead flat, and that's against a on average. That is, I should say, on average, and that's against a background of some more buybacks. So you take a company like Microsoft, and they're just putting in billions and billions into the share buybacks. And that is certainly helping, but it's not a reassuring environment here for the whole market overall. And what we've seen in the last few months generally is ranging, and then some higher moves. Wall Street getting up very close to its highs, even extending it on the S&P and the NASDAQ indices. NASDAQ indices doing best with the help of those inform autonomies, tech companies, and so on. The consequence of all this is that the valuations have gone up for the most part, and people are just waiting, hopefully, for the corporate profits. And analysts are doubling down on this, having been disappointed so far and lowered their expectations on corporate profits in terms of as quarters come due. They're now saying that before year end and in the first quarter of the new year that we're going to see some sharp increases in corporate profits. Well, what might cause that? And I think that really that's so far that's been the triumph of optimism, and we haven't seen much in the way of, as I say, in the way of those improving corporate profits. There is a belief that we're going to see a big push for fiscal spending, and that central banks have been calling for this for really quite a long time, as I and many other people have mentioned. Mario Draghi of the ECB has been saying it, he's been saying it for years. We need to see the fiscal spending from governments, and we need to see the corporate spending. And the current drive is to get governments to, say, increase this fiscal spending in the hope that that will then encourage corporations to increase their fiscal spending, and that that will improve GDP growth, and that it will also push the inflationary pressures up somewhat. Well, are we going to see that? I think we probably will. It may not be as much. Well, inevitably, it won't be as much as people actually call for. But I do think that the concern about the negative effects of negative interest rates and the limited scope that central banks have to help the situation anymore, and the fact that actually the negative interest rates that we do see and the extremely low interest rates just about everywhere else among developed economies, at least, that it's now counterproductive. And it's hard to argue with that argument overall. And therefore, I think that we will see this continued call for the fiscal spending, and that we will see some fiscal spending, and stock markets would probably like that in the short term, even though we're currently in quite a speculative environment here overall, and markets are prone to downdrafts when in this type of situation where valuations are on the higher side here overall, and there's not much to, they're susceptible to, as I say, to downdrafts if any bad news comes comes forward. And that's always a possibility in here. Now, if we get that fiscal spending, and I think we almost certainly will, probably starting before the end of the year, the market to actually watch, the canary in the coal mine, will be government bonds. And when we get the fiscal spending, that is bound to produce or help to produce a little bit more growth. It will probably produce a little bit more inflation. The stock markets won't worry about that. They'll probably like it initially, but the bond markets may well take fright. The stock markets that I would expect to do well are probably the ones that have been in form in recent months anyway. So we'll get further momentum runs on the upside by inform autonomies. We may see some additional recoveries by cyclical commodity shares. Anything that's been showing above average relative strength, some of the high yielders that are not under pressure to pay their dividends, those are the ones that are likely to perform while markets are enjoying the prospect of and the reality of that fiscal spending. But as I say, watch the canary in the coal mine, which will be government bonds. They're in bubble status here. I know I've been saying that for a long time, and a lot of other people are saying it as well. It doesn't mean that the bubbles won't actually burst, and I don't think one could say that, well, actually these aren't bubbles, unless you think that we're actually really going to have a major, massive deflationary crunch. Well, a few people do feel that that's likely, but given all the liquidity that central banks have provided, which have certainly kept that at bay for some time, and also given the fact that a lot of the deflationary pressures are caused by technology, that's disruptive here in the short to medium term, but it's a positive, I would argue, again, for the longer term. And certainly if we see the fiscal spending come through as I expect, I'd back that as keeping the serious additional deflationary concerns that some people fear, I think it would certainly keep them at bay. And we might actually see the opposite. I think we would see the opposite, as I've already mentioned. And as I repeat that point very quickly, that we'd see somewhat higher inflation pressure against the background of stronger GDP growth. And that could lead, or at some point, it would certainly push bond yields up somewhat higher. But we could get nervous conditions in government bond markets. I'm talking about going in through the end of the year and into the first quarter or first half of 2017. If we start to see spikes in government bond yields, that will be a very major warning here. And the canary in the coal mine here will stop chirping, and stock markets will become much more vulnerable. So I hope I haven't confused you on this, but my feeling is short term we are still in a speculative risky environment, short to medium term in a speculative risky environment. If we do get that fiscal spending, which I expect, that could give stock markets another boost. Here, I wouldn't look for a huge boost, but it would help GDP growth, and so it would start to or at least create the belief that we were going to see, and the probability that we were going to see somewhat better corporate profits to sustain stock markets near their current levels, keep them from falling too much from their current levels. And the danger signal further down the road would be spikes in those government bond yields. I wouldn't want to have any government bond yields in terms of equity positions. Well, the common sense strategy is, you know, don't get caught being leveraged and long and chasing rallies that are accelerating above their rising 200-day moving averages in the stock market. And when you do see some of those fabulous performances that are those momentum trades that are accelerating, if you have any of those positions, it's, I think, not a bad idea to gradually start reducing exposure there, particularly the institutional investors, because of the thinness of some of those markets and the speed with which they can turn. The alternative strategy is trailing stops to use, so that, in other words, you stay in, or the trailing stops, every time the market's hitting new highs, just push the stops up just a little bit further. And so when the rally stalls, then you get shaken out, but you catch most of the speculative overextension on the upside. Okay, now other markets. Let's stick with these stock markets here a little longer. I have described something through the fairly lengthy medium term, well into 2017. Overall, a choppy period. I described it as a speculative period, somewhat risky period. I don't look for a disaster. I don't anticipate a disaster. Things that will play on investors' minds, though, will be China, the actual slowdown in China. There's a Fitch report that I'm posting here today, which has been out for a couple of days, and that says that the situation is worse than generally feared. China has tried to, has stimulated, it's thrown some short-term money into the marketplace. So it's topped up liquidity. It's tried to stave off trouble, produce a bit of a rally. It's succeeded in that somewhat, but we're still in a situation where debt is a big concern here overall. Debt's a big concern generally for a number of markets, but not least in China. And that can be a drag here overall on stock market sentiment, and I think China will remain a concern probably for several more years. So I think again we're going to stay in this choppy period overall. And veteran subscribers will know that I've often talked about the fact that the eventual transition to a normalization of interest rates, and we certainly haven't seen very much of that. The U.S. is wanting to do that. We know that it is in the pipeline, and we will gradually get a normalization of interest rates, I feel. And the fiscal spending would bring that environment closer. And that'll be a nervous time for markets overall. On a longer-term basis, I think that we will get back into a normalization of interest rates, and I think we'll see somewhat stronger growth overall, growth in corporate profits as corporations start to or have the confidence to invest a little bit more. I'm certainly not expecting a disaster in here, and I haven't been expecting a disaster really following that 2000 and 2008 crash. Okay, moving on to other markets, currencies. Dollar index, very much range-bound, as you know. The U.S., the challenge for the U.S. is not to push interest rates up too quickly so that it causes that dollar index to go breaking up above that 100 level. It's currently, incidentally, at up slightly today at 95.47, so just below 95.5. And it's that level up above the 100 level where the central bank Fed has intervened, or the Treasury has intervened, to bring that down. The worst thing that could happen, I think, in terms of the global economy, would be to get a spike in the U.S. dollar anytime soon. And that would be bad for the U.S. economy. It would hurt U.S. corporate profits. It would be bad globally because there are a lot of long-term borrowers in U.S. dollars, and their costs would be going up. So I think that if the dollar continues to dollar index continues to range, that would keep that risk at bay until other economies start to show, some other economies start to show a little bit more growth, GDP growth, and enabling them to talk more about the normalization of interest rates. So the world's out of sync. We need to see stronger global GDP growth so that we get more of a coordination of monetary policies and a move towards this overall normalization of rates. So dollar index, the next big move will certainly be to the upside, in my opinion. The U.S.'s economy has a number of special factors going for it. It has the most autonomies. It has the best technology in a great many areas of technology. It's self-sufficient in oil, effectively, and those are all hugely important. Whereas the number two economy, China, which I discussed earlier, is struggling in here overall. The very long-term outlook for China, I think, is probably extremely good, but we are seeing a difficult few years, and we'll see a difficult few more years in China overall. That makes India more interesting, because for investors who are looking at international investors who are looking at the Asia Pacific region, if you're putting serious money in there, well, the three big economies, Japan, I should take them in the size of those economies, would be China, Japan, and India. And there are question marks over Japan, as you know, certainly question marks over China, and that makes the position in India, which was looking somewhat better, or has been looking somewhat better for several years, it would reinforce that belief here overall. Now, so get back to currencies though. Dollar index, next big move will be up, but hopefully not anytime soon. Sterling, and well, the Bank of England is determined to keep sterling soft. The smart economists, the Roger Bootles, well, there's only one Roger Bootle, and he's the best, in my opinion, in terms of his market forecasting. And he wants sterling to remain low overall. So I think that's likely to remain the case. And not to go a whole lot lower, people have been talking about 120 against the U.S. dollar. I think that's an extreme outside chance, but I don't see it moving a whole lot above the 130 level anytime soon. Chinese renminbi devaluing, and I'll post that chart again in here today, but it's controlled, of course, by China, but they will If you look at it against the dollar, the dollar is in a staircase upward trend against the Chinese renminbi. But we know from what I was saying about the dollar index, and you've seen the dollar index earlier on, that that's going sideways. So if the dollar is rising against the Chinese renminbi, that means the Chinese currency is weaker. And it's going to, I think, probably before the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised, I would to see it weaken further still. Hopefully it's an orderly devaluation, and if it were to start to run a little bit out of control, that would cause problems in other Asian economies, particularly in the East Asian region. And let's look at resources here. Crude oil. Now, you know the situation, more supply than demand, although with lower prices, demand has been picking up overall. The OPEC policy is not conducive to higher oil prices, and my view is that we're never going to see ever again those extremely high oil prices that we had seen up at $120 or more a barrel. Or the only way you could get that, in my opinion, would be if we actually had a sharp devaluation of the U.S. dollar, which is the last thing I expect in here for a very long time. So again, and the reason why oil is not going to get anywhere near those levels once again is, first, you're getting a huge amount of production. We can produce oil, the world can produce oil much, much more easily and efficiently thanks to the technology. And the really revolutionary change was, of course, the fracking. And we've only just begun to see the fracking. I certainly hope the UK gets its fracking underway fairly soon. There have been a lot of political objections to that, but the country needs it. Most other countries that are importing oil will, I think, be looking to develop some of their fracking potential, particularly to get the natural gas from those wells. Meanwhile, the renewables, they continue to become more efficient, led by solar. And that's something that's going to go on and on. And we'll see, I think, the renewables becoming increasingly competitive, as I've often mentioned in here. So that will certainly cap crude oil prices. And I think also we will see more development of new nuclear. And I'm just sorry that the UK is going ahead with that Hinkley Point plant, but I don't want to digress because I've already talked about that enough here. But that's an old technology, and it's an expensive old technology. But new nuclear is much more efficient, safer, and less costly. In terms of other commodities here, base metals. Now, again, with commodities, supply is always the big variable here. And if we go back to oil in the context also of the base metals, if you want to see higher prices, you have to reduce the supply. OPEC is not reducing the supply. They're producing as much as they absolutely can. So they're relying on the hope that some other oil producers are going to be put out of business. Well, they might, due to military conflict in the Middle East, or due to political instability in Nigeria, and some other producers, or natural accidents that actually occur, sabotage in terms of key pipelines. But I think that those who are hoping for higher oil prices are going to need to see some supply disruption. And I don't think it'll come from OPEC. They'll talk about it, but I don't think they'll do anything else but talk about it while continuing to produce as much as they can. And with the base metals now, again, technology is very effective in terms of the discovery and the production of these metals. Therefore, what we need to see more of, and we are starting to see more of this, is producers recognizing that they're better off by easing back on production somewhat, and that the ore in the ground is probably more valuable than ore that is actually produced here today. Now, meanwhile, they have salaries to meet and shareholders who want to see profits and so on. But I think that everybody will benefit in terms of the shareholders and also the labor forces if they don't produce quite so much. And that's what we're starting to see. It's a slow process, but supply is a little lower, and demand will pick up a little bit more as economies are stimulated. So I think we're in a lengthy medium-term recovery phase here in base metal prices, and that will help this highly cyclical sector, and including the share prices of these companies, to move higher overall for the rest of this year and into next year. Now, precious metals, and we have an interesting environment here for precious metals. They've been choppy somewhat, least so for gold bullion, but they are in overall upward trends that started earlier this year, started around the beginning of the year. We've seen a lengthy consolidation phase, which brought prices back closer to the rising 200-day moving averages, and I think there's a good chance that we will see prices moving somewhat higher over the next few months. So it's an interesting sector here overall, but don't pay up for precious metals. It's best to buy following the reactions, and I've often mentioned that. It's hard to do, though. People get nervous, and particularly if they're using the futures markets, and they tend to get stopped out on weakness, and they tend to chase a little bit on rallies. Well, we want to be buying on the setbacks and lightening positions on the good rallies. And on that note, I've covered all the points that I wish to do so at the start of this audio. So, it's been an exciting week. Have a very enjoyable, relaxing weekend. All the best.